It's like even the most painful lessons in my life, you know, it's like from big health crisis to divorce to big loss. I'm like, you know what? I'm so grateful because they were the biggest teachers to me and I'm meant to be here teaching. And so I can always teach it onward. And so even though they're so painful, I would never shortchange them because they have just given me these big, beautiful lessons.
Hey, midlifers. Welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show. Are you ready to break free from your mundane midlife? Are you feeling trapped in a vicious cycle of rinse and repeat days? No matter if you're experiencing a divorce hangover, job burnout, or you just have the midlife blues, I got you. Hey, I'm Wendy, your hostess of the Midlife Mostess. I too was hit by midlife like a freight train. I too felt stuck in the same dull chapter. I wanted the clarity of how to create a new life beyond divorce and the courage to leave an unfulfilling career. But I kept telling myself that I wasn't worthy and it was just easier to stay in my comfort zone until I found a little secret, the freedom to live my life my way. In this podcast, you will learn how to achieve a vibrant midlife mind and body, how to create solid relationships through love and loss, and how to create an awesome second half of life. Grab your grande latte, pop in your earbuds, and let's get this midlife party started. Hey there, midlife movers and shakers. Are you ready to come alive in 2025 and make it your best year yet? Well, I've got something super exciting for you. On January 9th at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, I'm hosting the Best Year Yet workshop. This is your chance to hit the reset button and design a life you absolutely love. Together, we'll walk through my three powerful steps to envision your dream year, energize your goals, and embody the life you've been craving. And the best part, it's totally free. Yes, free, free, free. Plus, when you register, you'll get your Best Year Yet playbook and a guided meditation to kickstart your journey. So, what are you waiting for? Head over to bestyearyet.net right now to grab your spot. That's bestyearyet.net. Let's make 2025 the year you truly come alive.
Welcome back to the Midlife Makeover Show. I'm your host, Wendy Valentine, and today we're diving into a truly empowering topic, stepping into your main character energy and redefining success on your own terms. Joining us is the brilliant Amana Altai, a holistic business and career coach, proud immigrant, and chronic illness advocate. Amana has helped countless leaders, executives, and founders connect to their brilliance and lead with authenticity. As a woman of Iraqi descent, she brings a unique perspective, often working with marginalized communities to help them honor their lived experiences while building a fulfilling life. Today, Amana will share her five-step practice to step into your power and help us shift from chasing happiness to cultivating contentment in every aspect of life. Please join me in welcoming the amazing Amana to the show.
Woohoo! Thank you so much for having me, Wendy. I am delighted.
And I think I probably messed up your first name again.
Oh my gosh, don't even worry about it.
Amana.
There you go. For friends listening, it's Amana. Like, I'm going to take a walk, but you know, call me what you can figure out to call me. It's fine.
Yes. Yeah. So good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I was reading your about page on your website.
Yes.
And I was reading your story. So tell everyone about that moment when everything kind of shifted for you, your definition of success, like your aha moment of like, okay, something has got to give, something has got to change, and I need to make some career changes here.
Yes. So I had one really strong kind of pivot moment, and then it sort of built since then. But I started my career in marketing and brand management, and I worked in luxury goods and jewelry for a little bit. And then I decided I wanted to co-found a marketing agency with someone that I had gone to school with. And it was this really cool idea where one side we'd work with emerging female entrepreneurs and take sweat equity for working in their businesses. And then the other side was traditional agency. And I did that for 7 years and it was amazing. I got this front row seat to seeing all of these female-led companies grow and thrive, but I had no boundaries, was like deeply codependent and putting everybody in front of myself. And I burned out and I developed 2 autoimmune diseases. And it happened in a very dramatic fashion where I'd been feeling really unwell And I think like a lot of people, I'd been to multiple different doctors, I think 7 before I got a diagnosis. And one day I was driving to a client in Connecticut and I get a call from my doctor and she says, "Amina, if you don't go to the hospital now, instead of going to your client, you are days away from multiple organ failure."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. So I had gotten so sick, was so burnt out, was so worn out. I literally had this choice of, do you keep going the way that you're going, which is clearly killing you, or do you choose another way? And so I chose another way. And the coolest thing was basically, at that point, I went back to school. I went to study nutrition, coaching, mindfulness, somatics, because I just wanted to feel better in my own life. And then when I did feel good, I was like, this is magic. I need to figure out how to teach it. And so it's 9 years since I created my own coaching practice, and my work touches on career and business, mindset, and well-being, because I really believe that we need all three of those pieces to actually thrive.
Yeah, it was interesting when I was reading your bio, and it was a holistic career coach. And I was like, I don't think I'd ever seen that before. But it's true, like, why shouldn't it be? Like, we kind of think of our career as something separate, something apart from us. And it's part of our whole life, right? I think on your website I read, it said, we spend more of our heartbeats at work than we do anywhere else. It should feel really freaking awesome.
Yeah. And it should, right? We literally spend more time in our jobs than we do with our loved ones, traveling the world on our passion projects. And we're one person, and we often feel like we have to like compartmentalize ourselves. But I think that's part of what makes us sick. And that's why I really do take a holistic approach to coaching, because I'm one Amina, you're one Wendy. You know, I actually can't be work Amina and home Amina. There's not enough energy or time for that. And so what does it look like to bring all of those pieces together to really honor ourselves and to honor our well-being? Because so many people are burnt out and sick right now. It's like, depending on what study you read, up to 80% of us are identifying as burned out. And I think because we're not centering our well-being, because we're not allowing ourselves to be the whole person.
Do you think some of it is by personal choice of how we choose to work? Or is it also even kind of what's expected of us in the corporate world nowadays, and even in certain countries and cultures?
Yeah.
That was a loaded question.
No, but I love that loaded question. I'm so glad that you asked it. I think it's twofold. So, and I'll talk about my own experience. So for me, really, it was a lot of my unconscious, unexamined beliefs, my limiting beliefs about work and worthiness. So I derived so much of my self-worth from my work. And I came from a lineage of hard workers where there was so much shadow around the word lazy. It was a very taboo idea. So, you know, I learned, okay, need to be the first one in, the last one out. Also, you know, I'm an immigrant, right? So like very much the immigrant story of like, you work really hard, you're so lucky for what you get, all of those things. But I also believe that overwork is a systemic issue because of things like the gender wage gap, because of so much bias in the workplace that we allow certain people to rise to leadership positions and we don't allow other people to rise to leadership positions in the same way. So then we feel compelled to overwork, to outwork, to get to the places that we want to go. So I think it's twofold. I think it's our own psychology and there's real systemic challenges.
Yeah. And I also too, I mean, I shared with you and most of my audience knows I'm over in Portugal now. And even like speaking to a lot of people from Europe, a lot of them will get, you know, just normally 4 to 6 weeks of vacation, of holiday. Yeah. And I know back in the States, like when I worked for corporate for a short period of time, I would only get maybe a week. And even during that week, I was stressed about work of like stuff I'd still left on my desk or stuff like it's going to pile up when I get back. And I think that's so important that you have that downtime and that it is true downtime. And sometimes you just, like, for the sake of your own health and well-being, you have to make sure that that happens.
100%. As somebody that has taken a physical hit to their health because they didn't make space for that downtime, I'm making it my life's work to make sure that people have a much more harmonious relationship with work and they do take that downtime. There's this meme that's been circling the internet that really cracks me up, but I think it's like painfully true. And it's basically like when Europeans put up their out of office, it's like, I'm gone for the month of August. I'm not going to check any of the emails that you send me. And then it's like when Americans take time off and it's literally this woman in the ocean with her laptop and a giant wave like coming to crash down on her. And it's like, that is the vibe that we live in.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
So funny, but not fun.
Right? I know. It's so bad. As a matter of fact, I can remember when I was working for corporate back in Chicago and I had one vacation. I was so excited. And I flew all the way out to California. I had my oldest son, my youngest son. We did this big hiking trip And we were hiking Half Dome. And if you know anything about Half Dome, like, it's like, that's, it is.
It's huge.
It is the scariest thing I think I have ever done besides delivering, you know, three boys. But I literally, like, I got to the top. And because there's no phone reception, which is a good thing, I was like so excited. I was like, my phone's not going to work. And I got phone reception right when I got to the very top of the mountain. And I was like, I looked at my phone and I was like, ooh, and there was this part of me. It was like, do I answer that? And I knew who it was. And it was a customer that was ready to buy. And I kid you not, I sold a house on top of Half Dome. But then I had realized, I was like, this is not for me. I cannot do that. And I knew it was affecting me. And I know, just like you, like, it affects you physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, your relationships. That affect, again, like, the holistic part of it, right?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. The job that you had prior to that moment that you knew you needed to make that change, did you feel that job could have, like, you could have worked with that to get it to the point that, okay, I could be happy here. I love this job enough. Or maybe you didn't love the job. Could you talk to your boss or your manager and say, hey, we got to make some changes? Or did you feel like, I just got to go?
Yeah, I explored that when I went to coaching. It was like very much the question, do I go, do I stay? Can I make the most of this? Is it me that's been the problem? Am I looking at this the wrong way? And when it came down to it, it really wasn't the place that I could thrive in. And I think it made sense for me to leave. And one of the things I say to people all the time is, like, when they feel guilty or whatever they're feeling about transitioning out of their role, one of the things I say to them is, everybody deserves the best person in that role. Like, the company deserves somebody that wants that role and wants to knock it out of the park in that role. And you deserve a role where you want it and you can knock it out of the park. And I didn't want it, and I wasn't knocking it out of the park. It didn't leverage my zone of genius. I was getting sick. It wasn't the healthy dynamic for me, but it was something that's very important to explore, because I say this to my clients too. It's so easy to jump from the frying pan into the fire, but everywhere we go, there we are, right? So if we don't look at our stuff here, we're going to drag it to the next place and the next place. So I think it's a both and proposition of, look at your stuff. And if it's time to go, it's time to go.
Yes. And giving yourself permission to pivot.
100%.
Because I think there's so many people that will feel like, okay, I've had this job for 20 years, or, oh my gosh, I can't leave it now. Especially, I mean, obviously, it's the Midlife Makeover Show. Most people listening are like between the ages of 40 and 60-ish. So they might get to this point like, oh my gosh, I can't go now. Like, I'll just suck it up and deal with it until retirement. So give me your thoughts about that, if someone is thinking that.
So there's a couple of schools of thought around our jobs, right? We can have the good enough job that checks the box for us, that, like, pays the bills, gives us the good insurance, allows us to pay for our kids' schooling. You know, it's checking a lot of boxes for us. Maybe it doesn't make our heart sing, but it's like really hitting the brief in lots of ways. And then there's the purposeful, more aligned role that I hope for you is checking all of the boxes, meeting your needs, giving you the money, and leverages your zone of genius. Yep. And that's the conversation I like to invite my clients into. I never want to make the good enough job wrong, because I feel like there's a season for that. There's a role for that. And people usually come to me when they're ready to relinquish the good enough job and play all out for the dream.
Right.
And so, wait, sorry, what was your question? I feel like this is only, like, this is appropriate because we're on the Midlife Makeover Show. We're allowed to lose your train of thought.
See, this is all normal. We're going to embrace this. I'm sure it's perimenopause or menopause or me
having
laryngitis and sounding like a frog. You know, I'm like, wait, someone out there is going, we knew what you were asking, Wendy, and you can't remember. I know. Oh my gosh. Well, yeah. Anyways, career changes, knowing when to pivot. Yeah, I don't know.
Great. I think that there comes a time for us when the benefits or the drawbacks outweigh the benefits.
Yes.
And I think it's really important that we aren't tolerating our jobs, that we find places and pockets where we can fully express ourselves, where we can be in our zone of genius, where we can contribute in a really powerful way. So if this job is to your detriment, it is probably time to go.
Yes, exactly. And the thing is, just like you, at any moment, like, you could get a diagnosis, and then that can affect everything. So in my opinion, it's like, it's never too late. Like, make the pivot if it's really affecting you. I guess it depends on the level, right? Like, if you're able to make some changes and you're able to get happy within that career, then you could do that instead of pivoting. But you know what? Oh, go ahead.
I think it's also really important to look at our fear stories. Now I remember what you said. You're like, if you're 20 years into your career, like, how do we make a pivot? So I think it's important to look at our fear stories because so many of us are so afraid of the other side because it's the unknown. And we'd rather stay in the dysfunctional known than we would throw our hat in the ring for something that is unknown and potentially so much better. And so I think it's really important that we work with our fear stories. We also work at the nervous system level to make sure that it feels safe for us to transition because oftentimes it is simply a story that we're telling ourselves. And there are beautiful opportunities out there if we looked.
Yeah. And I think the thing too, to really focus on is your strengths. Like, are your strengths really being utilized? Like you said before, like, and mine weren't. It wasn't until now that I'm really getting to use my strengths. And to me, I feel like I can actually, I'm so much better at working now because I'm using my own strengths and my own talents and my own gifts. Whereas before, like I was really, really struggling. Like, even if it was just something kind of, you know, monotonous and boring, I was like, oh my God, I can't stand this. Yes. But now it's like, it really, you want your career to light you up because like you said, like that's majority of the time where your heart is beating is in your career.
You just highlighted something that's really important to talk about, and that's our zone of genius. And each and every one of us has a zone of genius. We're born with this innate gift that we are meant to share with the world, but we live in a world that doesn't always allow us to get on the court with it. And we also view genius in a very particular way, which it isn't true, right? Most of us think about genius associated with IQ and like the Einsteins of the world, but everybody has a form of genius. Yeah. And because we're spending so much of our time at work, I think it really needs to leverage our genius because that's our highest yield contribution. So it's very clear to me, Wendy, that you have a gift, like a gift of speaking, an energetic gift, right? I see you doing like your life's work here. But so many of us don't allow ourselves to get to that point. But I think that's also associated with burnout because if we're laboring in a space that we're not designed for and we're not leveraging our zone of genius, we can burn ourselves out because that innate gift doesn't require as much energy, doesn't require the push and the force the same way some of those other activities or skills require. And that was true for me and for a lot of my clients.
Yeah. How does one discover what their strengths are, where they really shine? Do we deep down know what they are?
So a lot of us will readily discount our gifts because they come so naturally. And this happens all the time with my clients. I'll see them for like a couple of minutes in our first session and I'll kind of already instinctively know and I'll bring something up and they'll be like, but is that a gift? It's so easy. And because it's come so easily, we're so ready to discount it. But of course it's a gift, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important to ask ourselves, you know, where are we off the charts genius? Where do we not have to push force or effort to create something that's really transformative? Where do we kind of outpace our peers? And if you're really stumped, but I would ask yourself these questions first, but if you're really stumped, you can ask, you know, 3, 4, 5 people that you really know, love, and trust, and they know, love, and trust you, what they think your zone of genius is. But I would check in with yourself first because a lot of people can project. And also, I think I have a worksheet for this on the 3 E's that I can share with listeners too, if they want to dig into this a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I want that. Yeah. Like, I want that.
Great.
But yeah, you're so right. Like we do discount our strengths and our talents because of the fact that they're so easy. They come, that's why they're strengths and talents because they come natural.
Right. Exactly. So we're just so willing to throw it away. But what comes so naturally for you is really hard won for a lot of other people.
Yeah. The cool thing is now, I mean, you think about it with businesses and working remotely, there's so many opportunities. Like you can take anything and be like, okay, I'm going to start selling baskets. Or like, if you enjoy just making baskets, great. You can make a killer business out of making baskets. Like, and with, you know, internet and social media, there's so many different things that you can do. So it's like, I think it's fun actually to explore all the different possibilities of moving into a new career.
Yes. I think it's super fun too. A lot of people find it terrifying because they know a particular way. And, you know, when our money, which is tied to survival, is coming from that thing, that can feel really scary for people because they're often like, well, how can I leave a career that I've spent 20 years building that I know I can get good money in?
Yes.
But the thing is often our skills transfer and we usually don't have to start at the very bottom. So if we can get ourselves to that place where it feels psychologically safe, I believe it can be really fun too. I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you step into your, what do you call it, the main character energy?
Yes. So main character energy. I love this. So we are all the center of our own experiences. We are all the main characters of our lives, right? We came in alone. We're going to leave alone. But so many of us don't live life as if we are the main character. We live as a supporting character, maybe to our boss, to our partners, to our children, to whomever, right? And so I think it's so important that we seize the opportunity to allow ourselves to be the main character. Mm. I feel like you've got main character energy. How do you feel about that?
I do. I feel like yeah. I know I was thinking about it. I was like, I do now. I didn't before.
Yeah.
What I didn't own that. I always kind of felt like I could not write this my own script, if you will, like of my own play. And now I know that I can. And now that I always felt like as a people pleaser and someone that took care of everybody else, I put the oxygen mask on them first besides me. And so therefore I was not stepping into my main character energy. But now I'm like, mm-mm, oxygen mask goes on me first.
I see it and I love it. I think it's so empowering. And I think a lot of people resist it because they feel like it's quote unquote selfish, but it couldn't be further from selfish, right? Because if you are whole in yourself, what you can give to the world, to your family is that much greater because you're nourished at a soul level, right? So it's like actually the opposite of selfish.
I've got good news. The Freedom at Midlife 7-week group coaching program is now open for enrollment. Woohoo! Class kicks off on January 16th. This program is your ultimate step-by-step guide to transforming your mind, body, and life. Over 7 weeks, you'll reset your mindset and release what's holding you back, rediscover your passions and build confidence, create a healthy body, set boundaries, and design the life you truly want. And here's the best part. For a limited time, I'm offering $300 off just for my podcast listeners. Use the code 300 at checkout. But hurry, this special offer ends December 31st, 2024, and space is limited. Head over to freedomatmidlife.com right now to sign up and start your journey to freedom. Trust me, midlife is your time to shine, and I can't wait to help you get there.
I was going to say that if there is anyone in, you know, your friends or family or even in social media, whatever society that are jealous or frustrated that or, you know, calling you selfish because you're in your main character energy, it's because they are not in their main character energy.
100%. What we are jealous of or judging in others is usually inherent in us and we just haven't let it come to the surface.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So, go ahead. You go.
Okay. When it comes to embodying our main character energy, the first thing I think that is really important to do is acknowledge that we are the center of our own experience. And I know it sounds silly, but it is not. It's like the acknowledgement is the biggest thing because so many of us resist that, right? We don't want the world to orbit around us. And so we push it away. So the first piece really is acknowledging I'm the main character of my life and things do get to revolve around me.
Yes.
And then one of my favorite exercises around embodying main character energy is the self, not self exercise is what I call it. So basically it's like taking out a piece of paper and that on one side writing self, on the other side writing not self. And then on the self side, making a list of all the qualities and characteristics that are natural and innate to you. So maybe it's like a beautiful speaker, unapologetic, fierce devotion to supporting love in my family, whatever those self themes are. And then the not self is the things that we're living into when we're not really being ourselves, right? So maybe the people pleasing, which was one of mine too, not having good boundaries. And so making a list of the self and the not self themes, and then tracking over the next week where you are in your self themes when not self was showing up. And just bringing awareness to that list, automatically you'll start to shift more into the self. You'll be like, oh, there I went again with the people pleasing. And it's totally fine. Like, don't judge yourself for it. It's a well-worn pathway. And now we're going to choose something different.
You know, I was just thinking too, like how much a difference it makes when you're happy in your career and how that it creates a ripple effect in your whole life.
Yeah, 100%. I read this study last year that said that our managers impact our mental health more than our partners and our family. Yeah, because we spend so much time with them. They have a greater impact on us than our families, than our partners, than our therapists, I think was the data. And so it makes sense, right? It's like if you have a great relationship with your manager, your coworkers, leadership, you're going to feel that friction every single day. And you're going to carry that home unless you have a really great hygiene practice. And so I think that for me, that's why it's so important for that place where we spend so much time to feel really good.
So what do you think is the difference between the happiness and the contentment?
Yeah.
That you had mentioned. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm a big proponent of cultivating contentment. So happiness is really celebrated in the West, right? If you go to Amazon and you do a quick search, you'll find there are 20,000 books that are all about how to find happiness in your life. But the thing is we try to over rotate with the happiness and hold on to it all the time. But happiness is an emotion. Emotions naturally are meant to be fleeting, right? Emotion, energy in motion. They're meant to be changing all the time. And people that are the healthiest in the world are ones that cultivate something called emo diversity, which is emotional diversity, which means we welcome all emotions. We welcome happiness, joy, grief, sadness, anger, and we let them go because we recognize that they're always in transition. So when we try to grip on too tight to happiness, it actually makes the opposite happen, right? It makes us miserable because it is impossible to have happiness all the time because it is an emotion. But contentment is a much more stable state. So contentment is really sort of celebrated in Eastern traditions. And they talk about it. It's loosely defined as the knowledge of enough or unconditional wholeness, which I think are such beautiful definitions. And so it's kind of the idea of riding the middle, even through the highs and lows of life. And it's not to say that we don't get happiness. We get to have both happiness and contentment. But contentment is more that stable state, while happiness comes along for the ride with the other emotions that we also welcome in.
Yeah, I like that. And plus, I think too, I'll add in another C there, complacency. It is also, I know. Like, I mean, looking back years ago where I was at, I confused contentment with complacency, but to the point where I thought, like, okay, Wendy, you know, suck it up, just deal with it. You have a nice job, nice home, And then, but deep down, I wasn't really happy. And it hit me and I was like, wait a second, like, I'm actually in complacency. Not contentment.
Girl, yes. Yeah. So I just wrote a book about ambition. And in the book, I talk about how we really want ambition to come from a purposeful place, because for a lot of us, it comes from a painful place. And that was my story too, of like, I just wanted to be seen and heard. And so I was chasing all these accolades. And that's true for a lot of us. And so in my journey to not be an ambition monster, I actually did the same thing as you, as I swung the other direction to complacency. And it was this moment of realizing, oh, this isn't contentment. This is complacency. I'm resting on my laurels. And in my attempt to not be an ambition monster, I've become something almost as ill-fitting. I've become.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and then you're just like a robot.
Yeah.
You're just doing the things. Even if you're like successful, you could be very successful being complacent.
100%. 100%. And then you are the one that gets to say, actually, this doesn't feel right for me and I want something different.
Yeah. You have to have those, you have to ask yourself those difficult questions and be prepared for those difficult answers and be prepared to make a move.
Yes. 100%. And it's not easy, right? Especially if we're, you know, 20 years down the path, like we're talking about, it requires a lot of courage. Another C.
I know. C. Okay. So 5-step practice for stepping into your power.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's the acknowledge that we are the center of our experience. Then the next piece is make that list of self and not self themes and see if you can start to shift more into the self themes. Then it's also really shift our mindset around taking up space, because so many of us have a hard time with taking up space. We have an association with it. Maybe it means that we're selfish, that we're braggadocious, that we're whatever, right? So I want you to clean up your side of the street on the mindset side. What stories are you telling yourself about taking up space, being the main character? Mm-hmm. And then I also want you to cultivate something called unbothered energy. So unbothered energy is when maybe we're getting fierce feedback around us taking up space because people are having their own challenges and triggers around it, right? And so cultivating unbothered energy is when we've worked with this idea at the level of the nervous system so that we're unrattled, unshaken when people feel rubbed the wrong way by our bigness, because you deserve to stand in your shine. And some people are going to have feelings about that, but we can still be unbothered with that because we've taken the charge out of it at the level of the nervous system.
And then there's a quote I want to tell you real quick before you move on in regards to that. Marianne Williamson, there's nothing enlightening about shrinking so that others don't feel insecure around you. I was one that I would shrink because I was like, oh, I'm being too intimidating. I mean, I was told that all the time, like, you're too intimidating. Oh my God, you're shining too bright. You're too loud. You're too this, you're too that. I was like, okay, I'll just stay right here in the corner, just be really quiet. And then that's how you become miserable, right? Yes. But yeah, now it's like, just shine. Like, who cares? 100%. Let their, like, that's their deal. If they are intimidated by your light, so that's their issue, not yours.
Exactly. I love that quote so much. And like, that's their material. And I think the quote goes on to say, it's like, when you allow the essence of it, when you allow your own light to shine, it's an invitation for other people to be liberated too, and to be in their light as well. So it actually serves other people. It's not taking anything away from them.
Exactly.
Yes. And then the last part of the practice is simply to spend at least 10 minutes a day in your main character energy, because everything is a muscle, right? So the first time we do it, maybe we feel a little wobbly around it, feels a little ill-fitting. And so if you can just start by spending 10 minutes a day in that energy and then over time build from there, all of a sudden you'll be like Wendy and fully in your main character energy.
Hopefully not as crazy as me though, you know.
We love it.
It's a little too much crazy, a little too much wild. So if someone out there is listening, and let's say the empty nest, they've been taking care of the kids for the last 20 years, and they're like, I don't know what to do. What is my purpose? I don't know my gifts, strengths, talents. I really don't know where to go next. What would you recommend?
Yeah. And I actually have a little workbook on this, too, that I can drop you a link to as well.
Nice.
So I believe that purpose touches on 5 areas. Our zone of genius or our gifts, which we've talked about, our values, what brings us joy, what we want to impact, and what we need. And I'll take you through each of them. So zone of genius, we talked about, we each have a zone of genius. And when it comes to doing purposeful work, we want to be using those particular gifts because that's going to be the easiest, going to light us up the most, it's going to have the strongest return. Mm-hmm. Then there's values. When it comes to doing the great work of our life, values are so important because if we're working in a space that is misaligned with our values, it's going to feel like friction every single day, right? So if you really value the environment and you work in an organization that has a huge environmental footprint, every single day you're going to feel like, what am I doing? Then the third thing is impact. I think those of us called to purpose-driven work, we care about impact. And impact doesn't have to be huge and far-reaching. I always think about impact in the context of family, community, or the greater good. Mm-hmm. So what do you want to impact? When you leave this earth, what do you want to have changed for your family, for the community, for the greater good? Then there's joy. So we want the work that we're doing to feel joyful. And I think 60-40 is kind of like a good split. So if 60% of the time we're feeling joy, awesome. Because we all have parts of our roles that, you know, are just like things you got to do, right? So it's like, I love my work. I feel so privileged to do my work. But listen, you know, 25% of the time doing some things that I'm like, oh, a little too much admin for me, you know?
Yeah.
So real talk, 60-40 with the joy. And then the last thing is needs. And this is like the part of the framework that most people forget. They're like, oh, I'm doing this thing that I really love and it's really values aligned. But you have to have your needs met in terms of salary, in terms of time off, in terms of support. Because if you don't have that, the work will fail to exist. And if the work fails to exist, we haven't had the impact. We haven't made the contribution that we actually came here to make.
Ah, love it. Yeah. You're so wise.
Oh,
I mean, not that I wanted you to go through all of that stuff, you know, 10 plus years ago, whatever that was, but it's good that you did because now here you are.
I think about that all the time. It's like even the most painful lessons in my life, you know, it's like from big health crisis to divorce to big loss. I'm like, you know what? I'm so grateful because they were the biggest teachers to me and I meant to be here teaching. And so I can always teach it onward. And so even though they're so painful, I would never shortchange them because they have just given me these big, beautiful lessons.
So true. I totally agree with you. And then it's also a reminder too, like even if you decide to take a step forward into something like into the unknown or career change or relationship change, whatever, and it's going to be tough, just think about that though, that tough time is going to equal some type of really cool life lesson. It's going to make you into a better person. Yeah.
Can I tell you this one quick story?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I used to work with this. So as a coach, I'm always being coached because I really see the value of coaching. And at one point I had this amazing coach and he was a former Vaishnava monk and he used to live in a monastery, like was unable to touch money, like this whole really interesting lineage. And one day I was like really like lamenting about the challenge of the day, you know, going on and on. And then he looks at me like deadpan and is like, what if that's God? Like, what if that was God too? Like, what if all the challenges in your life were, and for people that, you know, if the G word isn't right for you, higher power, universe, whatever you want to sub in there. Mm-hmm. But like, what if everything that happened to you was actually in service to you? And I know sometimes that can sound like toxic positivity and I don't mean it to because I welcome the challenging and the good and like label it as such. But for me, it's been a very helpful place to rest that some of these really challenging moments in my life were opportunities for me to unfold, to grow, to be of service.
Yes, I totally agree. And I change it like instead of saying this is happening to me, I say it's happening for me.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's so cool. Love it. This has been a good conversation. I hope everyone else enjoyed it.
I know.
Hopefully Hopefully I'll sound a little bit better for tomorrow's interview. I won't sound like
you sound
strong.
Amazing.
I do.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch Friends? Remember when
yes.
Yeah, remember when Phoebe, when she lost her voice?
And then, oh my God. And she, yes. And she sings and she's like, oh my God, I'm so talented.
Yeah, she was like loving her voice as she was singing. And then she was so boned when her voice came back. So this could be my permanent voice from now on. It's going to be really, really raspy.
I genuinely think you sound fabulous.
Oh, good. Oh, good. So tell us about your book that's coming out.
Yes. Thank you so much for asking. So my book, it's called The Ambition Trap, How to Stop Chasing and Start Living. It comes out on May 13th, but you can pre-order now everywhere you get your books. Yeah, so from Barnes & Noble to Amazon to your local bookshop, you can pre-order now. And it's about kind of changing our relationship to ambition, because I think we're in a moment that we really need to, because there's so much burnout, because there's so much wobbliness around it. And ambition is one of those really interesting words. It's kind of culturally complex, whether, you know, depending on who we're labeling, it can either be a benefit or a drawback, right? So ambitious men are seen as powerful and go-getters, while ambitious women are often seen as shrill or even called the B word, right?
Yeah.
So the book is really about being in right relationship with our ambition. So allowing it to come from a purposeful place versus a place of pain. So I highlighted this a little bit earlier, but my ambition in the beginning of my career really was coming from a painful place. Like I had some core wounds around rejection and, you know, so I felt like, okay, I need to be the smartest, the fastest, the best in order to matter. And that, it took me out, right? I ended up developing two autoimmune diseases. That plan did not work. And so I had to find a new relationship with my ambition, and that's really what the book is about. And so I hope you'll check it out. There's beautiful exercises in there, really great client stories as well, and you can get it everywhere you get your books.
I love it. You know, I was just thinking though too, especially at this age in your 40s and 50s, even to take a look at your entire life and going forward, because ambition, that definition can change at this age in this second chapter. Ambition in your 20s and 30s is so different than in your 50s and 60s.
You're so good at your job. I'm so glad that you said that, because in the book, I have this diagram around ambition, that we have this perception that ambition means more all the time, more over more over more, right? And like nothing's ever enough. But I actually believe that ambition's like a perennial flower, that it goes in cycles. So it's like, you drop a seed into the ground because there's a desire for growth. And then like, you know, you have a good inner and outer environment. So the seedling grows and then you kind of peek through the ground and you have this momentary beautiful flowering in the sun. And then the seasons change and the petals fall off and you wind down and you go back underground before you're ready to take aim again. And our ambition is the same way. It's like, we're not supposed to be growing more over more over more all the time. We're supposed to cultivate pace, replenish, let it shift over time, let it shift with our bodies, with our hearts, with our minds. And that, I think, is a really kind relationship with ambition versus a painful one.
Yeah, because I mean, just thinking about, for me, the experience I've been through the last few years and asking myself, what do I want? Like, yeah, I mean, I can go out there and get some big job and make a ton of money. Like, do I really need all that? Do I need all that money? Do I need all this stuff? Like, for me, like, I didn't want to have all the stuff. I didn't want to have to keep up with that. And then, therefore, that allowed me to have more money because I'm not maintaining a house and all the other things, right? Yes. So, like, you have to really ask yourself, like, what do I want? And then what does, just like the definition of success that we hear so many times, what's your definition of success? But what's your definition of ambition? And what is your definition of contentment?
Amen. Yes. Everything that you just said.
Yeah. My wheels are turning now too, so.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait for you to read the book.
I know. Thank you so much. And then where can we find you?
Thank you so much. You can find me on Instagram at Amina Altai. Also my website, aminaaltai.com. The spelling will be in the show notes. Yep. And thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy to be with you and in your energy. And thank you everyone so much for listening.
Thank you. Everyone have a beautiful day.
Did this podcast inspire you, challenge you, trigger you to make a change, or spit out your coffee laughing? Good. Then there are three ways you can thank me. Number one, you can leave a written review of this podcast on Apple iTunes. Number two, you can take a screenshot of the episode and share it onto social media and tag me, Wendy Valentine. Number three, share it with another midlifer that needs a makeover. You know who I'm talking about. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Get out there and be bold, be free, be you.